Du lytter til Supercomputing i Danmark, et program om forskning, teknologi, big data og supercomputere. Supercomputing i Danmark udgives af DAIC. Din vært hedder Iben Julie Schmidt.
Hvis vi for alvor skal forstå de molekylære mekanismer bag udviklingen af kræft og designe nye og bedre behandlingsformer, så bliver der brug for både bioinformatikere og meget kraftige supercomputere. Det har man indset hos Kræftens Bekæmpelse. Her har man udvidet forskningsafdelingen til også at omfatte en større gruppe bioinformatikere, som arbejder side om side med de eksperimentelle forskere.
I'm Elena Papaleo, and I'm the junior group leader of a recently established group in computational biology at the Danish Cancer Society Research Institute. And we are the very first group of this kind at the institute. It's very exciting for us. The people here, they put a lot of effort in research for the fight for cancer. And we can span from, let's say, the more really basic research on cancer mechanism to more translational oriented toward the patient research in collaboration with the local hospital and with other Nordic hospitals. And our group is trying to collaborate with almost everybody here, and it's really exciting because we can see, so we are a computational group, so we can do prediction, but then we can have immediately an experimental validation of our hypothesis through the work of our colleagues.
So you, I mean, they produce data maybe in the lab or exactly. In patient cohorts, and then you do the computation?
Yes, it can be both way. Like they have some data they need to rationalize, and we do the calculation that allow to have a better insight or to understand what this data really means. But it can also be the other way, like that we start with our research, computational oriented. We come out with a hypothetical mechanism, and then they do some experiments, for example, doing mutagenesis to try to validate what we predicted, and then it's a continuous crosstalk because they might find out something different from what we thought in the beginning, and then we need to ask ourselves what is wrong in our model and how we can make it better, or it can be that they can confirm our hypothesis.
Nogle af de data, som Elena Papaleos gruppe arbejder med, er genetiske profiler, som stammer fra prøver taget fra kræftpatienternes tumorer. De sammenlignes så med profiler fra raskvæv, og ved hjælp af avancerede statistiske og bioinformatiske metoder, ser man på, om der er bestemte mønstre, som adskiller det syge fra det raske væv. Finder man sådan et mønster, har man en såkaldt signatur, der kendetegner for eksempel mennesker med brystkræft.
So what we do, there is a part of the group that is actually using data that come from genomic or proteomic profiling of cancer patient samples. So they are tumor samples taken from the patient that have been profiled with these new techniques. And then of course we have a reference normal tissue, how it should behave. And using advanced bioinformatic and statistical method, we try to define what signatures are different in a patient with, for example, breast cancer or a patient with another cancer type.
Elena Papaleos gruppe undersøger også, om folk med den samme type kræft kan have forskellige signaturer, og dermed måske også skal behandles forskelligt. For fremtidens medicin går mere og mere mod behandlingsformer skræddersyet til den enkelte patients genetiske profil.
But even more, I would say more ambitious than that, because sometimes even in the same cancer type, there is a big heterogeneity. The patient can behave in different ways. So we try to see patients that have a common cancer type, how they differentiate each other, because this could be important in the future for more tailored therapy.
Når man har fundet en bestemt genetisk signatur, så er næste skridt at se på, hvilke molekyler, for eksempel proteiner, der spiller en vigtig rolle i den pågældende signatur. Hvad er proteinernes funktion? Hvordan interagerer de med andre molekyler? Her er vi over i den strukturelle biologi, og ved hjælp af en supercomputer kan man i dag undersøge proteinerne molekyle for molekyle. Man kan sige, at supercomputeren kommer til at fungere som et mikroskop.
our vision is that we want to use a multi-scale approach to cancer, that we start from this large signature, we figured out which one are the molecules that are important in a certain condition, and then we focus on those at a more molecular level. And at that point, there is the other part of the group that come in, that is using approaches more in structural biology, in which they try to understand what is the structure and the function of this molecule, for example, a protein, how this can interact with other molecules in the cell, other protein, the DNA, for example. It's very typical for us to find out some important regulator of transcription, or with the membrane. There are so many membranes that define the organelles in our cell. And this we do with the computational structural biology, but also in tight collaboration with experimental structural biology. That it's not carried out here, but at the University of Copenhagen. And then when you have, for a certain case of study, the signature, then you want to understand a little bit more about it. Let's say you find the cluster of genes that seems to behave in the same way. Then you can ask yourself, using bioinformatic tool, are they, for example, involved in the same pathway, in the same cellular response? That would make a lot of sense, because then I can start to think about that process and target it. And how they do that? And here it's where we start to move into the structure, because to understand how they do that, you need to understand how they interact together, like Lego pieces, yeah, in a way.
How the molecules
interact. How the molecules are. Indeed, we like to call this part of our work the computational microscope, because you really look into detail. Mm-hmm. So they can put computational microscope for cancer protein.
And that's where you need the supercomputer,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
That's
especially, how it's possible. Especially there, because otherwise it would not be possible, or it would be possible only once in a while on a certain protein, and that doesn't really increase our knowledge, because we need to keep in mind the complexity of it.
Når man går skridtet videre og forsøger at forstå de genetiske signaturer på det molekylære niveau, så bliver det hurtigt meget komplekst. Finder man for eksempel en mutation, der medfører, at et bestemt enzym bliver nedreguleret, altså ikke, der ikke bliver produceret så meget af det, så viser det sig hurtigt, at mange andre proteiner er afhængige af netop det her enzym, og så udløser det en masse andre effekter i en celle. Samtidig er man også nødt til at se på mange forskellige mutationer på én gang, da de typisk optræder sammen. Og resultatet er et kæmpe system, hvor man skal forstå, hvordan de forskellige dele spiller sammen og påvirker hinanden og det samlede system. Det kræver, at man kan undersøge mange genvarianter på én gang, og ikke kun kigger på ét gen eller ét protein ad gangen. Og det er derfor, at man virkelig får brug for meget regnekraft.
We recently identified in breast cancer an enzyme that is important, that it's downregulated, so it expressed low level with respect to the normal condition. That it's a special enzyme in the cell that is important to remove a modification of other protein that it's called nitrosylation. It's a redox modification of cysteine. It has not been that explored because people try to focus on other more canonical modification. And the problem is that when you downregulate this guy, there are a lot of other protein that need this modification to be regulated in turn, that miss this link. And for example, we found out doing this screening that a mitochondrial chaperone, that it's a protein that helped other protein to fold, it's depending on this modification to be degraded, so to have the right turnover. So what happened? Now we are downregulating the enzyme that allow to remove this nitrosylation, and we are impacting on this mitochondrial chaperone. So this came from the signature in some of the cancer patients. And then we decided to focus on this specific chaperone to understand what the modification is doing to the structure and to the function. And to do this, we use tool in molecular modeling and molecular simulation. And this is a very large protein system, and it's very challenging because it's a dimer with multiple domains. and we need to simulate it surrounded by the solvent, by water molecules. We need to simulate very large conformational change, opening and closing of the chaperone to allocate the substrates. And this really require intensive calculation. We cannot really do on a simple computer. We cannot really do it even on our small local server. We have a small cluster, but it's not enough.
No.
And then, very interestingly, we recently found out again, looking in the patient signature, that not only the level of the enzyme that regulate the chaperone can change, but the chaperone itself can be mutated in many cancer studies. So it's another level of regulation of this guy. And so it becomes even more challenging, because at this point we not only want to understand the chaperone function itself and the modification, just one modification, but we want to understand a lot of mutation. And this means for us to model each variant in parallel. And to be really able to make these approaches that are very accurate, useful for the community, we need quite large computational resources. Otherwise, we will be stuck for 2-3 months on just one variant that maybe is not even the relevant one.
Mm.
So yes, so the nice thing for us, it's in using a computer, we started with a pilot project that was exactly on this chaperone.
Yeah, you got a pilot project on computer room,
exactly.
Trying some hours and
exactly, times and hours. In the beginning, only on the modification.
Mm-hmm.
So we were comparing the normal variant and the modified one. And then now we are starting to move on a larger scale, because now we have all the setup. We tested the infrastructure and it's very, very good. And now we can start to screen all these mutations that we found in the patient at the same times, because they can run all together allocated to different nodes of the cluster. Yeah.
So and you can run it in parallel.
Exactly, in parallel. And it's a two-way to work it in parallel, because we can screen multiple mutations, but also for the same variant, for one unique variant, we need multiple core. It's not that each of them is gonna run on one CPU. We need multiple of them, because it's an enormous system. It's when you simulate it explicitly, you have to think about a box full of water molecules and this protein that all together they are up to, I would say, 100,000 atoms.
Mm.
So even the single variant is not capable of running, providing a fast results on a small cluster. For example, when we tested the computer ROM, we were very surprised about the good scaling across multiple nodes.
Yeah, what features of computer ROM has been especially helpful in your research?
Yeah, the fact that I would say three main things. So the fact that we could use for the same variant software for molecular dynamics that were already available, so we didn't have to think about all the IT related stuff. The software was already installed.
The software
it was
for,
already
yeah,
tested.
For modeling the
it was already there. That was sparing us a lot
mm-hmm.
of time.
Yeah.
Because
what was that software?
The Gromax is
Gromax.
The name. It's
okay.
Commonly used for molecular simulation.
Okay.
And it was already set up in a way that we could run using scaling nicely up to some hundred CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Spread on multiple nodes.
Yeah.
The second thing is that even when we were using so many resources, we never experienced a long waiting time in the queue. And that's pretty amazing, because we had large experience also with other computational facility around Europe, but there are so many users and they are so overwhelmed that then even if you can run on multiple core, then you might spend more than 24 hours or 2 days waiting for your calculation to get priority into the queue. This doesn't really happen with computer elements.
Okay.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is for the more structural part of the project. But we can have also advantages in using it for the analysis of the sequencing data that I mentioned to you. Because for us, the problem is that we often have to analyze many, many samples from cancer patients. They might be very large study on large cohorts. And you also sort of have replicates to do. So you have the same sample patient in which the experiment was done multiple times to see if you consistently have the same results. So this exponentially increase the number of samples we need to analyze. So even if these approaches, they are not so intensive in terms, they don't need for each sample multiple core. We have thousands of samples, so we need again to parallelize in a different way. And this it really is not feasible in-house. We don't have this kind of facility. The long-term goal is not only to understand the mechanism, but also to figure it out when we have understood a bit of it, how we can target some of these proteins, some of these molecules, and moving more toward the drug design at that point.
Men vejen er lang fra kortlægningen af de grundlæggende mekanismer, til man står med en ny behandling. Fordi forskningen i dag er så afhængig af netop databehandling af enorme mængder data, så bliver den computerkraft, man har til rådighed, helt afgørende. Jo hurtigere man kan regne, jo før kan man tilbyde patienterne en ny behandling.
To be really competitive and to make all this nice bioinformatic tool really useful, the time factor is obviously the problem. And we want, so we have the method, we know them. We would be capable to do this very fast if we have the resources for that.
And that's the computer
and
resources.
And the computer resources, because they are never enough. I can tell you that all the time my people are somehow complaining, like, I want more code, because there are so many things we can do. And then it's a little bit of a pity that we need to stay here and wait for the calculation to finish before submitting a new one and so on. So I think that all the methodological and workflow that we have, it's brilliant, it's nice, but until we can scale up and do it really high throughput, I mean, it's just a theoretical exercise. Mm-hmm. So in this, I think that places like Computerome are really making a difference for our research.